I call this meeting the Property Tax Division to order pursuant to Rule 10.01. The first order of business is that we need to take a roll call to determine who is present. The clerk, Mr. Peterson, will now take the roll.
Chair Joaquin?
Present.
Joaquin present. Vice Chair Gomez?
Gomez present.
Gomez present. Representative Hertas?
Hertas present.
Hertas present. Representative Anderson?
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Representative Becker Finn, it will be joining us shortly. Representative Fisher?
Fisher present.
Fisher present. Representative Green?
Present.
Green present. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan? Representative Herr?
Present.
Herr present. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt present.
Marquardt present. Representative Mortensen?
Mortensen present.
Mortensen present. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski present.
Pawlowski present. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson present.
Torkelson present. Madam Chair, there's a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. And I want to thank both Mr. Peterson and Ms. Sirkvenik and the rest of the staff that helped us put this meeting together today. It is a long one with lots of great projects. Thank you also to the cities and their representatives on the call today. We've met with many of you previous to this meeting to hear about your projects, along with Vice Chair Gomez. And a special thanks too to Chair Marquardt for letting us have tax time so we could get these all done today. So with that, I want to note that all the committee documents for today have been sent to members and are in the committee page on the House website. And I would like to once again, thanks staff and nonpartisan staff for getting it all together. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearings. No members of the public had signed up to testify today. And the idea today is that we'll be hearing these bills and then laying them over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. With that, the first item on the agenda is the approval for the minutes from March 2nd. Representative Marquardt, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would move approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Does everyone have any questions about those minutes? Seeing none, we'll move to void this vote. This will be a voice vote. So members, please briefly unmute yourselves. All those in favor of approving the March 2nd minutes, say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed, nay. The motion is approved and the minutes are adopted. Members, also in your electronic packets is the revenue impact summary put together by nonpartisan staff for the bills that are before us today. And your committee packets have also the individual revenue impact statements. You'll see that the revenue impact statements all say zero. There's also a very comprehensive list of the projects with their requests, as well as a document that gives each jurisdiction's net tax capacity in the last 5 years of levy. Finally, there's a memo that briefly goes over the changes the legislature had made to the local option sales tax process over recent years, along with suggestions on how we can approach evaluating these projects. I would like to thank nonpartisan staff for their guidance on finding definitions of regional significance in the current statutes and ways to identify the nexus between those paying the sales tax and being able to access the project. With that, the next item on our agenda is our very first bill, House File 3107. Representative Hertas, would you like to move House File 3107 before the division?
Move, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 3107 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Representative Igo, welcome to the committee, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee for allowing me some time today. House File 3107 is an extension and a little bit of a cleanup in regards to a local option sales tax for the city of Grand Rapids to help pay for the historic and home of the Grand Rapids Thunderhawks IRA Civic Center. So due to the pandemic and rising costs, we need to adjust that amount a little bit so the city and the community is able to pay for the much needed repairs so we can continue to host some of the greatest hockey tournaments in the Northland. With me today is my city administrator, Tom Pagel, and I'll let him kind of take it off and go into the logistics a little bit.
Thank you, Representative Igo. With us is City Administrator of Grand Rapids, Tom Pagel. Mr. Pagel, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Pagel. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Grand Rapids. Thank you for allowing us to update you on our project. I want to first thank you for authorizing our local option sales tax at last spring session in 2021. At that time, you had authorized the city to collect up to $5,980,000. Since that time, we have completed final design on the project. And I think, like many communities who are in the design phases and bidding out their projects, they've seen some significant increases in the project costs. In particular, our project has gone from a $10,976,000 project up to a $15,616,000 project. There's three primary categories where that increase has occurred. One is in our roof replacement, where we've gone from about $5 million in an opinion of cost up to $7.2 million. And in our refrigeration replacement, that's the ice making equipment, we've gone from about $1.9 million to $3.2 million, resulting in about a $1.3 million increase. In addition to that, as we got into design, we recognized we had some fairly significant ADA compliance issues out in the public parking lot that services this regional center. And so we have added in the parking lot improvements, which are about $1.5 million, which includes an overlay to the project. So with that, we're looking at an overall project increase of about $4,639,000. So we are asking you to consider amending our current legislation to increase our collection up to $10,600,000.
Thank you, Mr. Pagel. Quick question too. You have not, last fall didn't go out yet for the, on your ballot yet. You're waiting until this fall?
Correct. Our first general election is coming up this fall. We have not had a general election yet.
Thank you, Mr. Pagel. That was all the questions I have. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Pagel? Representative Hertlaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Pagel, you've talked to me about this project. And since we've talked, I guess I have a little bit of reflection about this. You were here last year and did get approval for the project. What you're describing now is a little more than a 40% increase in the overall cost of the project. And I do understand that the voters have not yet approved this. And, you know, I don't know what their reaction will be to paying a tax, you know, for a longer period of time as proposed the last time around when you came to the legislature for approval. But did you have good numbers or a plan completed or have good estimates? Because I'm in the building construction trades and 46% seems more than just the supply chain issues. It seems to be maybe not having a full comprehensive plan the first time around.
Well, I think
Mr. Pagel?
Madam Chair, Representative Hertlaz, if you pull the parking lot improvements out, certainly it's not that increase is less. You know, it was the hope we wouldn't have to address parking lot improvements when we came to you last year.
Representative Hertlaz, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we got a big agenda. I guess in the end, whatever happens here, I guess the voters get to decide.
Thank you, Representative Hertlaz. Members, any other questions? Representative Igo, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just thank you to the committee for taking the time today to hear one of our concerns here in Northern Minnesota and Grand Rapids. And I appreciate your support so we can send this to the voters in November.
Thank you, Representative Igo. With that, I lay over House File 3107 for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 3443, Representative Hertaus, would you like to move House File 3443 before the division?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 3443 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Representative Grunhagen, welcome to the committee and please present your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing this. This is a request from a small community in my district, Henderson. It's a small community, but they have big ideas. They have a lot of events going. I never saw such a small community have so many events, and including a 300 car plus roll-in that they have every week during the summer hours. They're looking to do some improvements in their committee or in their community and have a small increase on a sales tax in their city. We are also fortunate in previous years to get them some bonding money to address flooding problems at Henderson. Some of you may have seen that on the news. So with that, I have the mayor of Henderson here and I'll allow him to give his testimony. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. With us, we have Mayor Keith Swenson of Henderson. Mr. Swenson, will you please state your name for the record and introduce yourself? Sorry, was I on mute? Mayor Swenson, would you like to state your name for the record and introduce yourself?
I think we were muted. I'm very sorry.
Oh, no worries. Can you hear me now? Yes, okay. We can.
I'm Keith Swenson. I am the mayor of Henderson, and I will be making our case. Thank you for hearing us today. Just proceed?
Yes, go ahead and proceed.
As Representative Grunhagen indicated, we are a small town. We are situated in the floodplain of the Minnesota River. We are about 1,000 people. We are arguably one of the oldest cities in Minnesota. So we have a historic aspect and an environmental aspect being in the river bottoms of the Minnesota River. There are several reasons we want to add this half percent, 15-year, $240,000 total bond to our public works. We host a lot of events, and we bring on a Tuesday night on our car roll-ins, we will bring in 300-400 classic cars and probably 1,000 onlookers. The infrastructure that allows us to do that has been paid for through property taxes from our homeowners. We feel this would be a way to lighten the load and be able to receive that half percent in a way that unburdens the taxpayers of Henderson and takes advantage of our tourism. We also, and the project is to revamp Allenson's Park, which is on the bluff at the south end of Henderson, improve the camping facilities and the amenities in that park, and serve as a trailhead for a trail through the river bottoms that is being made possible by the state funding of Highway 93 and County Road 6. As a flood mitigation project. Because we have the advantage of having that right of way accessible to us, we will hopefully have this trail built and Allison's Park will serve as a trailhead for our access to that trail. Is there anything else?
No, thank you, Mayor Swenson. Members, do we have any questions for Mayor Swenson? I enjoyed chatting with you about your connection to the bike trail, too. I'm a bike. Well, come and hoping, check out your town.
We're hoping to invite you down as soon as the roll-ins start.
I'll have to tell you, though, where I grew up in Stillwater is actually the oldest city in Minnesota, but there's probably quite a few claiming that one, too.
Well, we claim that it was a filing issue at the St. Paul level that we have. And actually, Joseph R. Brown, who founded Anderson, was there at the founding of Stillwater too. So,
see, you learn something new every day. I will definitely have to visit your town. Members, do we have any questions for Mayor Swenson or Representative Grunhagen? Seeing none, Representative Grunhagen, final word.
Yeah, just a final, this is just authorizing them to author it. It will be voted on, and which I'm completely in favor of, and appreciate your consideration and including it in the omnibus bill that comes forward. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I will lay over House File 3443 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Members, the next item on our agenda is House File 3716. Representative Fisher, would you like to make the motion to move House File 3716 before the division for discussion? Representative Fisher, you're on mute.
Thank you. I thought I had muted. Yes, I'd like to move House File 3716 in front of the division for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Members, we'll just have you move the bills in front of committee for consideration, and then I'll move them for and possible inclusion at the end. So moving on with that, sorry about that. Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee, and will you please present your bill?
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. This bill has been years in the making, years and years and years and years. When I was growing into adulthood, Willard Munger was my state representative. And I just admired him so much. And when I became a representative, I had much of his, what had previously been his district. And so I was honored to serve with him. And in the last century, I was had the opportunity when he was environmental finance chair to add the names of Hermantown and Proctor as spur trails to the state trail of Munger State Trail. And some people say I am hopeless, but most people say I have hopeful optimism for the future. And as I said, in the last century, we got Proctor and Hermantown as official in the statutes that they were authorized to be have spur trails to the Munger Trail. And it is time. Last fall, we had the groundbreaking or the ribbon cutting on the what part of a Hermantown trail that would be this regional spur. And now this bill is before us to give Proctor the authorization to have additional tax for this recreational purpose. And so hope and optimism go together. And Jake Benson, who is another optimist and city councilor for a long time and former mayor of Proctor, is here to explain why the time has come.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And with that, our next testifier is Councilmember Jake Benson. Mr. Benson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Jake Benson, a Proctor City Councilor, a business owner, and an officer of the Proctor Chamber of Commerce. I thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to be here. Our role as city officials is to work for and promote the wishes of our citizens. And that's why I certainly appreciate my time today. Proctor is about 145 miles north of St. Paul on I-35. We're known as the largest inland iron ore sorting facilities in the world. You might know us from Proctor Hermantown Mirage Hockey. But more importantly, getting back to the Willard Munger Trail Spur, this link to this regional trail has been a dream going back three decades that could connect that trail to our LCCMR regional recreation area. Our residents have long been aware of our unique situation. Our first sales tax received a 77% voter approval. A second request was supported in the high 60% range. We're home to the South St. Louis County Fairgrounds. We're the entrance on I-35 to the Spirit Mountain Recreation Area, which is a big for the Munger Trail Spur. Our citizens know the value of our sales tax because we have had to explain it through two previous referendums, along with voluminous amounts of newspaper articles and city communications. A 2019 study showed that 42% of all Proctor land is owned by governments outside of Proctor. They don't pay property taxes, or do they pay any payments in lieu of taxes? The largest property owner, the railroad, owns about 13% of all the lands. We're bordered on three sides by two cities that have a sales tax. Duluth sales tax is 8.88%. Our neighbor Hermantown, who we share a number of programs with, is also looking for a 0.5% increase, in part to complete their citywide trail system that will reach Proctor's borders and link us to that Willard-Munger Trail, which stretches from Duluth to Hinckley and provides access to trail systems that extend across Minnesota. If passed, our 0.5% will bring Proctor's sales tax equal to Duluth and likely Hermantown's. We would not be here if not for our citizens and their support asking for this. The business community supports it. Our visitors ask for it. Our Proctor Hermantown community education will support this as a wellness effort. We ask you to give our citizens the opportunity to vote on their initiative. And with me today is our city administrator, Jess Rich.
Thank you, Councilmember Benson. With that, our next testifier is City Administrator Jess Rich. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jess Rich, and I am the Proctor City Administrator. I'm relatively new to the city of Proctor. And if I can just piggyback off of what Councillor Benson said about community buy-in, as I acclimated myself to my job, I looked at a lot of planning documents that were in the files. And I have to say that almost every single one, whether it was transportation or wellness or economic development, pointed to the Munger Trail Spur, the Proctor-Hermantown Munger Trail Spur. So I can testify that it is definitely a community priority as someone relatively new to the community. Just to give you some numbers on it, the total trail spur is 16.5 miles. Proctor's share is 6 miles, but I will have to say that it is the most difficult because Proctor sits up on the ridge line of Duluth. And so we have some very difficult terrain to overcome in order to make that connection. The total project cost of the total trail is now estimated at $15 million. Proctor's share, this number is inflated due to like some of the construction costs we talked about earlier in this session. We're estimating that maybe it'll be around $8 million by the time we get to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rich. With that, members, do we have any questions? With that, members, do we have any questions? I think I have one quick one. I know we discussed when you were talking about the project how difficult the 6 miles is within the city of Proctor. Besides the ridgeline, I think you're having to tackle getting around I-35W. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have I-35, we have major power lines, we have the elevation. Our preferred trail route, as a is the best elevation. And you as a hiker would know, we want to give a nice elevation and a good slope so that it's accessible to everyone.
Thank you, Ms. Rich. And Representative Murphy, I believe you were telling me that this is kind of the missing link for the trail. Do you want to give some final words since I'm not seeing any questions?
Well, I think that we would all enjoy a downward slope into Duluth and to hook up with the Munger Trail. And Hermantown and Proctor are going a little north, and so we'll be going south. And I urge the members to carefully consider this and let me keep my hope and optimism for the trail and to enrich people's experience that made one of the first trails the longest trail in Minnesota for a while. And all Minnesota should be connected by trails. And this is our portion of it. And so please, I appreciate your consideration and look forward to further hearings.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. With that, I lay over House File 3716 for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 2923. Representative Pawlowski, would you like to move your bill before our division? Representative Pawlowski, you're on mute.
No, I'm not.
Don't worry, I've done it like twice today already.
So move, Madam Chair.
Thank you. With that, the bill is before the committee. Go ahead, Representative Pawlowski, and present your bill.
House File 2923 comes to us actually from the mini session that was held in Winona in southeastern Minnesota in October of 2019. That was the first legislative look at the needs that the Winona County was facing building a new jail. And I'm going to stop there because we have the county attorney, Winona County Attorney Karen Sonneman. She's been the point person on this project. A lot of it is because we no longer have a Winona County Administrator at this point. So she's sort of doubling as Winona County Attorney and County Administrator. So Madam Chair, if you would go to Winona County Attorney Karen Sonneman.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. Winona County Attorney Karen Sonneman, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Yoakum. My name is Karen Sonneman, and good afternoon also Vice Chair Gomez, Republican lead Hertas, and members of the committee. I have served as Winona County Attorney since 2011, and I've also chaired, or I'm also the chair of the Winona County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. And I'm here to ask for your support for House File 2923, which would authorize Winona County to hold a referendum to impose by ordinance a sales and use tax of 0.25% to finance up to $28 million to pay for the construction of a replacement jail. And we have started that project. I can see it from my window here at the courthouse. And that would also help cover associated bond costs for the bonds that Winona County has issued at a time when bond rates are at their lowest in a generation. Let me give you a little brief history of our project. In September of 2018, the Minnesota Department of Corrections ordered that the Winona County Jail be sunsetted, that is, close on September 30th, 2021. Previous inspections by the Department of Corrections had identified a long list of structural and operating deficiencies in our jail, which could not be easily corrected. It was clear that simply remodeling the over 40-year-old facility, which was built to 1910 standards, would not meet the needs of the county nor regulations of the Department of Corrections. Now, prior to that sunset directive, the county had already taken steps to evaluate its options. In December of 2017, the county board created the Jail Advisory Committee. I served on that committee. And after about a year of study, we issued our report, and the county board approved the construction of a jail, which consists of the following features. The secure part of the facility, the inmate housing area, will consist of 51 cell units with an 80-bed capacity. This includes 8 separate units designed with flexibility in mind. And units are not specifically designated male and female. 5 of those 8 units have sub day rooms, which allows for 13 different classifications of inmates, thus the flexibility to meet the needs at the time of booking and also any later reclassifications of inmates. The facility will also have 6 holding cells in the intake area that can be used to house juveniles if necessary for a very short time, enough to get them into court without having to transport a juvenile literally all across the state sometimes, which we do now. 4 of the 8 units are considered special management or mental health units. These are designed with correctional grade behavioral health furniture and fixtures and smaller bed counts. There is also a work release or what's called a Huber unit. The type of jail security layout will be a pod system versus our old jail's linear cell block structure. The type of spaces in this building besides inmate housing will include sheriff's department and jail administration offices, visitation rooms, secure court transfer, virtual meeting spaces for court, counseling and visitation, jail intake worker office, our jail social worker office, our treatment court coordinator office, will be a medical unit, a kitchen, a laundry, a gymnasium, classrooms, counseling rooms, and multi-purpose rooms. And in our intake area, it will be a larger and safer and more efficient booking area. And it will also include a work release lobby with locker rooms. This project, members of the committee, also includes remodeling and upgrading our 911 dispatch facilities. There will be program space for programs such as GED, job training, other education, mental health counseling, chemical dependency counseling, and things like parent and family education. Winona County has made a commitment to serving our community by investing in various programming for inmates while understanding that jail isn't their last stop for educating those individuals, nor is it the last stop for treating the root cause of their behavior, but we can get a good start with this new facility. The goal is to include but go beyond that secure incarceration area to include program space, offices for our current jail intake and reentry programs that evaluate individuals at the time of booking and begin their reentry planning at that time through our reentry and assistance program we call RAP Plus. And that includes screens for mental health and other community connection referrals through our jail social worker. Our design is a model in repurposing our jail to meet 21st century community needs and providing efficient and effective spaces for our existing programs to serve the needs of individuals. Now, besides the criminal justice aspect, the jail construction project is also a prime example of an economic development engine generating jobs and income literally across the state. At peak, there will be 80 construction workers on site. And looking at the project directory, which I had your staff provide for you from our Market and Johnson, our construction company, you can see that there are 12 pages of all different subcontractors on the project, from elevators through the Otis Elevator Company in Roseville, Minnesota. Also BKBH Engineers and EDI DOKJS in Minneapolis. Chair Yoakum, in your area, there's Building Supply out of Edina, and our architects are Klein and McCarthy from St. Louis Park. We also have structural steel installation through Danny Construction Company and Soles Steel Erectors in Shakopee. And many, many more, as you can see from our project directory there. So again, Winona County asks for your support and passage of House File 2923. I thank Representative Pulaski for sponsoring this legislation. I thank all of you for your time today. If you have any questions, I certainly can answer some today or contact me at any time for further information. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sonneman. And then I did enjoy your time in hearing more about your project. If I can remember right, you said that although it was built in 1970, maybe you can tell me what specifications it was built to.
It was built to 1910, the year 1910 specifications, because at the moment that it was going to be built, the DOC was going to be changing their regulations. And so our county board at that time felt in order to save costs or whatever their motivation was, they would quickly build it to the 1910 specifications, which was the prior from the late 1970s changes. So we have been working with a 1910 jail, and much to the credit of our sheriff and his staff, we've been able to keep people safe in that jail, but it wore itself out. And so now we are looking forward to a new jail. And hopefully with this local sales, option sales tax, if you do move it forward, we will have opportunities to help pay for it through our sales, generating through our sales tax in the county. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sonneman. And thank you also for all the work you're doing on the programming to help with education and mental health supports and drug treatment so that we can help with recidivism too. Really greatly appreciated. Members, are there any other questions for Ms. Sonneman? With that, Representative Pulaski, final word.
Thank you very much. And yeah, I know you've got a full agenda.
Thank you, Representative Pulaski. With that, I lay over House File 2923 for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. The next item we have on the agenda is House File 3748. Representative Fisher, would you like to move House File 3748 before the division?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 3748 before the division.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Lippert, welcome to the committee and please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This bill would allow for a local option sales tax question to go on the ballot in Rice County. The funds raised would help build a safety center replacing the current Rice County Jail, one of the oldest county jail facilities in the state. The Department of Corrections has downgraded the jail due to less than the required amount of recreation and programming space. The new facility will provide more space for mental health and substance abuse treatment support. A computer lab, gym, and flexible classroom space as well will allow for more programming options for those held at the jail. Rice County Commissioner Steve Underdahl and Rice County Administrator Sarah Folston are here to say more about the project.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. With that, we have Rice County Commissioner Steve Underdahl here. Mr. Underdahl, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Steve Underdahl, I'm Rice County Commissioner. Thank you for hearing our request, and I would refer to our County Administrator, Sarah Folstead.
Thank you, Mr. Underdahl. Ms. Folstead, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sarah Folstead, and I'm the County Administrator for Rice County. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we are.
Okay, thank you. Again, thank you for the opportunity to share with you our proposal for the local option sales tax. So in summer of 2019, for a little history, the State Department of Corrections did notify the county that we were going to have our classification downgraded to a 90-day hold facility, again, citing that lack of programming and recreational space, as well as some safety concerns. Similar to Winona County, we have a 1972 constructed jail. So again, prior to those changes in requirements, it's the linear block style, which really limits our ability to make any necessary improvements to meet the current standards of the DOC or really the needs of the inmates that we're currently seeing. So in July of 2019, our county board approved an RFP for a jail study to review the needed improvements that would meet the requirements. And since that time, we've been granted two extensions by the state as we progress through our study. We evaluated four different options. To do nothing and just deferred maintenance and begin boarding our inmates elsewhere. We looked at, can we renovate our current downtown site? We also have a jail annex, so our inmates are currently split between two locations based on their classification, because we cannot accommodate them all in one location. Building on our jail annex location or a green site. We held a series of public open houses, both in person and virtually, given that we were in a pandemic, for feedback on the options. And in May of 2021, the county board voted to proceed with the development of a 76-bed facility, a combined public safety center with the jail and our law enforcement on a green site. And for reference, our current two locations house 72 inmates. So it's an increase of four beds in the new facility. So in September, we were able to purchase the land for the new site. And now the board's been looking at ways that we can finance the cost of this facility. It's estimated that the facility will be just under $50 million. So we're seeking a local option sales tax of 3/8, the 0.375%, to help fund the debt service on that facility. Our new facility, we're really putting an emphasis on, again, that programming space for treatment, for a drug court, for mental health. Our Board of Commissioners has committed to staffing a new unit, which is a behavioral health unit. So we are embedding social workers and people who work with mental health to do case management. So when someone enters the jail, we can do more comprehensive review of their needs and then try to help follow them, connect them with services while they're in jail, but also once they're released, try to help get them connected, whether they go to a community in Rice County or in a community out of the county, that they're connecting with services, again, to hope that they're able to leave a little better than they enter our doors. Also, again, all the educational space, more counseling and remote access to virtual hearings and things of that nature. Again, I think, thank you for your consideration, and this new facility will definitely help us meet the needs of our inmates that we're seeing coming in the door now.
Thank you, Ms. Volstead, and thank you for the focus on programming and screening when folks come in so we can make sure they're successful when they leave. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Lippert or the testifiers? With that, I want to also mention, thank you, a while back, Representative Becker Finn joined us. So sorry about that. I meant to mention that before we even started on this bill. With that, seeing no questions, Representative Lippert, do you have some final words?
I simply thank the committee and you, Chair Joachim, for the time and consideration today.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. With that, I lay over House File 3748 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 3606. Representative Fisher, would you like to move House File 3606 before the division?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 3606 before the division.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Carlson, welcome to the committee, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim and members. House File 3606 proposes an additional City of Bloomington sales tax of 0.5% on retail sales within the city. The revenue collected by the sales tax would be used to provide funding to improve aging city facilities. Many of Bloomington's most used assets need significant investment or replacement. Four projects have been identified that could be funded through a Bloomington sales tax. So with me today are Bloomington Mayor Tim Boosey and City Manager Jamie Verbrugge to talk about the four projects and their significance to the City of Bloomington and the entire metro area.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Mayor Tim Boosey, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so very much for taking the time to hear us today. My name is Tim Boosey, and I have the honor and the privilege of serving as the mayor of the City of Bloomington. As Representative Carlson said, we are bringing forward a request for a Bloomington sales tax of 0.5% to be used to fund four regionally significant projects within the City of Bloomington. I know you have the information in front of you, but I'd like to take just a moment to go through the four projects. They include the significant renovation of the Bloomington Ice Guard, which includes a new roof for the entire facility, and a complete replacement of the R22 refrigeration system. And I know that you've heard from other communities facing the same challenges of R22 not being available any longer as a refrigeration option for ice rinks. The second project is a new community health and wellness center. It would replace two existing facilities, our public health building and our Creekside Community Center. Bloomington is unique in the fact that we do have a public health department, and we serve both the cities of Edina and Richfield as well, for a total population of about 180,000 people served by our public health department. The third project is an expansion of the Bloomington Center for the Arts, which includes a new concert performance space. We currently have a wonderful theater but it is simply not well suited for our very popular orchestral and choral music programs. And the final project is a new clubhouse at Dwan Golf Course, as well as significant course renovations. The clubhouse is small and it's frankly past its useful life, and the course is in need of renovations. There are just three points that I'd like you to know about these projects that we're bringing forward today. First, all very clearly fit the definition of being regionally significant. Bloomington Ice Garden rents 9,000 ice hours and hosts more than 24 tournaments and figure skating events with skaters from across Minnesota and the United States. And I can't prove it, but I firmly believe that every skater who has ever laced up skates and played hockey in Minnesota has played at Bloomington Ice Garden. I really do believe that. Our Bloomington Public Health Department, as I said, serves both Edina and Richfield, serving a population of 180,000. And during the pandemic, our public health department served thousands of individuals from outside of their service area with both testing and vaccinations. The arts groups that I talked about, they're housed in our Center for the Arts, and they provide programming for audiences or members that perform, and they come from 11 different counties in Minnesota in 2021. We also have a database within our ticket office that shows tickets are bought from zip codes that are literally across the country. Across the country, ticket buyers come to Bloomington Center for the Arts for performances. And finally, Dwan Golf Course provides golf amenities and services to more than 50,000 golfers every year. Last year in 2021, nearly 60% of patrons were from cities outside the city of Bloomington. The second thing that I want you to know is that the needs that we're addressing come from two main factors, either outdated and in some cases functionally obsolete facilities, or programming and use that is so successful that these facilities are literally bursting at the seams. And finally, Bloomington has made significant strides in recent years in the creation of new affordable housing and the preservation of our naturally occurring affordable housing. And frankly, we're very proud of that. We're looking for an alternative funding opportunity for these facilities so that we don't have to rely on property tax dollars, which would impact the significant gains that we've made in the areas of affordable housing. We learned recently, Madam Chair, that Bloomington has reached 78% of our 2030 affordable housing goal as set by the Metropolitan Council. We're very confident that we'll reach 100% by 2030. And as I said, that is something we're very proud of and we are looking to maintain within the city of Bloomington. With that, thank you so very much, Madam Chair. I hope you'll consider our request moving forward. Thank you very much to Representative Carlson for bringing this legislation forward. And if it pleases the chair, I'd like to turn this over to Jamie Verbrugge, our city manager here in the city of Bloomington.
Thank you so much, Mayor Bussey. Sorry about butchering your name to start with. Our next testifier, city manager, Jamie Verbrugge. Verbrugge, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity. My name is Jamie Verbrugge. I'm the city manager in Bloomington. The mayor did a pretty comprehensive job covering the different projects. Just a couple of additional points that I want to make. From our perspective, we have been trying to balance where we are making the investments with precious property taxpayer dollars for facilities in the community that are in need of significant renovation or replacement. I think many of you will recognize that Bloomington is a community that is of a certain age, where many of our facilities are approaching that point in time where they have outlived their usefulness. And it's not just the ones that are in front of you, Madam Chair and members. It includes a number of the facilities that are necessary for us to deliver our essential and core services of government. We have five fire stations that are in need of replacement and or significant renovation, and they're scheduled in the next 8 years. The cost for those is nearly $100 million. We have a public works garage that we're also replacing because the current fleet maintenance garage is undersized, because when it was originally constructed, the equipment that was being worked on was much smaller than it is today. And that's a similar situation with our fire departments. The apparatus and the equipment we're using is outgrowing the space that's allotted for them. And so we're focused on making sure that those essential core services are being funded with the property tax dollars. And we're trying to make sure that balancing all of these capital investment needs, we're doing so with sensitivity for property taxpayers. One thing that I want to focus on is that, you know, Bloomington, as we think about ability to pay, we have a household income, average household income, that is about 6.5% less than the average household income than the Twin Cities as a whole. So, you know, it's important for us to be really judicious and responsible about what costs we're assigning to our property taxes, and at the same time trying to identify alternative revenue sources for other facilities that are still really important, one, to the quality of life of our community, but two, important to the ongoing service delivery that we provide. So I think I'll stop there, Madam Chair and members, and if you have any questions for the mayor or me, we're happy to answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Verbrugge. Members, any questions for Representative Carlson or his testifiers? Seeing none, Representative Carlson, final word.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for your time today, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. With that, members, I will lay over House File 3606 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda, members, is House File 2702. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move House File 2702 before the division? Is the one hard part about not being around the table to see if people are there. I will move House File 2702 before the division. With that, Representative Ellison, welcome to the committee and please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House Bill 2702 is an increase from the 2021 approved $21.6 million to $53.3 million in the revenue that the City of Edina can collect with a 0.5% local option sales tax. These funds would be used to expand the Braemar Ice Arena. Just so members know, the Braemar Ice Arena is one of the busiest ice arenas in the state of Minnesota. We have approximately 500,000 annual visits that are recorded by residents from 158 different Minnesota communities in 12 states. Madam Chair, I will go directly to my testifiers to discuss our modified request. Today, I have with me our Mayor Edina, or Edina's Mayor Jim Hovland, who would go first, and then Scott Neal, our city manager, is here as well.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Welcome to the committee, Mayor Hovland. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Hovland. I'm the mayor of the city of Edina. With me today is Scott Neal, our city manager, and he'll follow me in the testimony, just as you heard with the city of Bloomington. It's nice to see, first of all, so many familiar faces, even virtually, to see you all. It's a real distinct pleasure. Thank you for being with us today. I also want to tell all of you that in Edina, we want to express our gratitude to each and every one of you and the rest of the legislature for your actions last year that allowed us to go to our residents on a capital improvement master plan project at a regionally significant facility, Fred Richards Park, for $8.1 million and for capital rehabilitation of the Braemar Ice Arena, another regionally significant facility, at $13.5 million. We'll be going to the voters in this fall of 2022 on those two proposed projects. As many of you know, in the state of hockey, and we've heard discussions about hockey from both Bloomington and Grand Rapids, Braemar has served a key role serving not only our city and our kids, but students and families from across the region and across the state and even internationally. And as Representative Edelson noted, we had approximately 500,000 visits from residents of 158 Minnesota communities in 2021, visitors from 12 different states and one other country. In addition to the capital rehabilitation needs that need to be accomplished at Braemar Arena, we have found, particularly in the past year, an ever-increasing demand for ice time so more kids can participate not only in hockey but other sports like figure skating. A committee of our residents had been studying ice arena needs, but this work was not completed and no recommendation was therefore made by the end of the last legislative session. And that is the reason we're back with you today. But we are asking for your assistance and the ability to go back to our residents with a capital improvement expansion plan project request seeking an additional $31.7 million in local option sales tax funding authorization, which will bring our total authorization sought to approximately $53.3 million. The addition of this capital improvement expansion project to our existing authorization is well within our original capacity, causes no need to request an increase in the rate or the duration of the collection of the tax if approved. Suburban communities have important regionally significant projects, as you just heard from the city of Bloomington, like so many other communities in our state. This was recognized by the legislature in particular with respect to Edina and giving us the ability to go to our voters on two potential needs that were regionally significant in nature in 2020 and 2021. As a reminder, Edina doesn't get local government aid and it is one of the top fiscal disparities net contributors in the state. It is a city proud to serve its own people and help other cities as well in the Minnesota tradition. But sometimes even a prosperous town needs to seek legislative assistance on some matters, particularly those of regional significance, such as the case in the 21-22 legislative session, just as it was in the 2020-2021 session. We are therefore back before you asking for your support and your permission to add Braemar Arena Capital Improvement Project into the list of projects we can take to the voters this fall for potential approval. As previously mentioned, adding this capital expansion project will not require additional capacity and require no increase in the projected sales tax rate or the duration of that tax. If approved, then our voters can address the two projects previously approved, and this capital expansion project will do it all this fall. Thank you very much for your consideration. Now I'll turn it over to Scott Neal, our city manager.
Thank you, Mayor Hovland. City Manager Scott Neal, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Neal. I'm the city manager in Edina. I think the only thing I will add to what the mayor described is really something that you also heard from the Bloomington city manager, and that is that we manage our property tax levy very carefully. We have a number of other facilities that really don't fit the definition of a regionally significant facility. That we are using property tax dollars to improve both in the current and long term. One of those is a new fire station in the Southdale part of our community, but another is a pretty well-funded by property taxes street improvement program that we just approved last year. So we are watching how we spend our property taxes. We want to spend them carefully. When we have an opportunity to perhaps avail ourselves of a different kind of revenue source, we want to do that to broaden the amount of revenue opportunities we have for regional facilities like Braemar Ice Arena. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. With that, we'll go to member questions. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is the second proposal we've heard today that is coming back from last year, expanding the scope of what they had asked for last year. I have two questions, one for the city manager and one for the mayor. So I'll start with the city manager. Mr. Neal, what is the total tax capacity within the city of Edina?
Mr. Neal.
Member Hertas, members of the committee, the numbers that we submitted in 2021, the net tax capacity of the city was $141,273,381.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I was thinking about the additional spending you want to do, which was sounding like $30 million. How would that impact that in terms of the average taxpayer on the term of years that you're talking about?
Mr. Neal.
Member Hertas, members of the commission, do I understand the question if we were to fund this project with general obligation bonds? Is that the question?
Well, you've got different ways. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess you've got a couple of different ways at your option. One would be with general obligation bonds and the debt service on it, or would be to levy the funds, which generally would be, as we just discussed, debt service on it. But what would that mean to the average taxpayer, average rooftop, average home?
Mr. Neal? Member Hartas, Madam Chair, we do have that data. We're having it being produced right now by our financial advisors. I don't have it available today, but we are going to be sharing that information with the state and with our council members. So yes, we are working on the calculation.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Representative Hartas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that explanation, Manager Neal. Mayor Hovland, you kind of characterized this as we're not raising the rate, we're not extending the term of years, and yet we're going to double the size of the project. Could you elaborate on that, please?
I think that Manager Neal. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hurtos. Good to see you. Good question. I'm going to turn it back over to Manager Neal to answer that question.
Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Madam Chair. The project that was approved, or the authorization that was approved last year by the legislature, authorizes the city to spend approximately $13.5 million at the ice arena. And that is really to improve all of the functioning guts of the thing, right? All the dashboards and floor replacements and ice and refrigeration and heaters and boilers and water systems and electrical systems, all of the kind of the critical infrastructure within the arena. From a facility standpoint, we're gonna do all that stuff. I think you're gonna come in and you're gonna not be able to see $13 million worth of improvements because it's all kind of behind the scenes.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Neal. I'm not sure that you answered my question. I guess in the mayor's presentation, it was characterized that you would be doubling the expenditure, not raising the rate, and I'm asking how you do that with the same number of years or term as described. Did I misunderstand how the mayor presented that?
Mr. Neal.
Madam Chair, Member Hurtas, no, you did not. I think another dimension of this that's not really apparent is that when we brought, if you look at what the University of Minnesota Extension Service projected for us, they projected that we would generate $4 million a year, and over 19 years, that's $76 million. When we brought our initial proposal to the legislature, we had a large component of it that was transportation funding. It was suggested to us by both sides of the aisle that not to include transportation projects in our bill. So those were removed. Essentially what we're asking for now is to take that revenue that was going to be spent on those projects and allowing us to use it for an arena expansion project instead. And that arena is already kind of fits the example of a regionally significant facility. I hope that answers that question.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that explanation, Mr. Neal. I don't think anybody disputes the significance and the regionality of the Braemar sheet of ice that certainly has done well to bring a lot of youth into the realm of hockey. But it's sounding a little bit like you got the authorization last year, and sometimes it feels like a little bit of a bait and switch, but it would appear that maybe knowing that the roads maybe weren't the best use of regionality and the levy that or the authorization that was granted last year, it sounds like the proposal wasn't modified before presenting it to us, and so now you're supplanting a different project for what you had previously gotten approved. Is that correct?
Mr. Neal?
Madam Chair, Member Hurtas, I would say we are bringing to you a project that we wish we could have brought to you before, but didn't because it wasn't fully baked and ready for your consideration. So from a timing standpoint, it's ready now.
Thank you, Mr. Neal.
I would just add that
Mayor Hovland.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hurtas. As I mentioned in my testimony, we had a committee of residents that worked diligently on trying to figure out what our future needs were going to be at the Braemar Ice Arena. And unfortunately, that information wasn't ready for sharing with either the legislature or even our own residents until after we finished the last legislative session. So when we saw the extent of the needs that were projected under the plans, which was that we needed to add two new ice sheets along with deconstructing one, creating a covered walkway to our existing west rink, add a parking deck, expand the lobby, the drive lane, the safety drop-off area, and the outdoor programming space, we thought we should come back and visit with you to see if we could add this expansion project to the existing rehabilitation project at Braemar, and that is kind of the essence of our request. Also, with respect to that study that the University of Minnesota Extension Service did, I think they did show some significant capacity there from a tax sales tax standpoint, as Manager Neal is mentioning. And we certainly didn't allocate all of that last year. We only got about partway there to the full capacity. So we've got more than enough room at $54 million to keep it at the existing percentage and stay within the existing time frame to capture those potential revenues to do all of these regionally significant projects.
Thank you, Mayor Hovland. Representative Hertaz, any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Neal and Mayor Hovland for clarification of that. I think there's probably a lot of communities which they had the ability to raise $54 million from a half-cent sales tax. You're in an enviable position.
Thank you, Representative Hertaz. Members, any other questions? With that, Representative Edelson, final comments.
Nothing. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. With that, I lay over House File 2702 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. With that, members, our next bill on the agenda is House File 3760. Representative Marquardt, would you like to move House File 3760 before the division?
Madam Chair, I will make that motion.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. With that, Representative Vang, I see that you also have an amendment. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
I'll move the A1 amendment.
Thank you. With that, the A1 amendment's before it. Representative Vang, welcome to the committee. Do you just want to briefly describe your amendment first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment is, after much discussion with my city, essentially takes out the outdoor adventure park facility, lowering the sales tax option from $135 million to $55 million for just the community center.
Thank you, Representative Vang. With that, members, does anybody have any questions on the amendment before we adopt it? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote, so please unmute yourself. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Vang, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 3760 allows for a half-cent sales tax to assist with the financing of expanding and renovating our community center, Brooklyn Center, that serves the people of Brooklyn Center, the Greater North Metro Region, and indeed the entire state. If you would allow us to do this item to our voters, the city will be able to share the financing with citizens who do not reside in the city, but are benefiting from this facility. It will also reduce the overall tax burden for Brooklyn Center residents who, as you hear, are already heavily burdened relative to mobility. The city of Brooklyn Center carries the overburden of regional facilities as a host community and is a city that is disadvantaged relative to many others its size. Brooklyn Center is one of 44 suburbs in Hennepin County and has the lowest average income. The ability to share the cost of these regional facilities with non-residents who use our community would ensure residents are not having to pay the entire cost for the region and would keep the pressure off increased property taxes. You have been provided additional materials in your packets, Madam Chair. With that, I would like to introduce the testifiers who will elaborate further on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Vang. With that, we have here to testify Makita Butler, Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, Marikita Butler. First off, I want to thank you for taking time to hear our request and consider funding for this regionally significant cultural community center. Brooklyn Center is a community with a great deal of need. The community has experienced significant day investment over the last several decades, which has eroded its tax base and made it impossible to fund investments to meet the needs of our changing community. As you consider the city's request for local option sales tax authority, please keep in mind a few important facts. Brooklyn Center is the most diverse community in the region. 57% of our residents are people of color and a quarter are foreign born. Brooklyn Center has the lowest median income in the region and the highest property tax in Hennepin County. Brooklyn Center residents pay 73% more for the exact same city services as other residents in neighboring communities. This is an equity issue as much as it is an economic one. Yet despite this, Brooklyn Center is rich with cultural diversity, resilience, and entrepreneurial people. As we have talked with community about what they want, across the board, regardless of income, ethnicity, or background, people talk about wanting to feel pride in their community and to celebrate our unique diversity. To have places to gather, come together as community, places to take friends and family when they visit. We believe that a world-class amenities aren't just for wealthy communities. In fact, we believe that this project will bring not only economic benefit, but also pride to our community. Because Brooklyn Center deserves quality assets as much as anyone else, an economically resilient Brooklyn Center benefits the entire region. With that, I will turn it over to Meg Beekman, our development director, to talk about the project and answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Butler. With that, Meg Beekman, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Meg Beekman, Community Development Director, City of Brooklyn Center. Thank you, Councilmember Butler. Thank you, Representative Vang, for introducing this bill, and Madam Chair and committee members for the opportunity for the City of Brooklyn Center to speak with you today. We're really excited to be talking about this project. The current Brooklyn Center Community Center serves 115,000 people annually, and of that, 65% already today are regional visitors versus local. It's a central location. It's got excellent access to major freeways, and it makes it a really easy place to visit. The city has an existing Olympic-sized pool. It's one of only three in the state. However, the facility constraints limit that pool's use for regional and competitive activities today. And while these assets make the community center an excellent regional host site for traveling sporting events, conferences, and meetings, the facility was built in the 1950s. It's undersized, and it does not meet the needs of the community or the region. The city's done extensive engagement and outreach over the last several years. And through that engagement, the need for recreation services and programming that really has been elevated as a top priority in our community. We know that there exists a large gap between the needs of the region in terms of recreation services and the available facilities and programming that are located in Brooklyn Center. The City of Brooklyn Center and the region have a clear need for culturally relevant recreation and wellness facilities and programming. As previously mentioned, Brooklyn Center has a highly diverse population, and this is also true of communities that surround Brooklyn Center. The Brooklyn Center Community Center serves residents from a wide array of cultures and ethnicities, and this rich diversity is one of our region's and Brooklyn Center's strengths. And yet, there's really no central place where community can gather, come together in a place that's culturally inclusive and welcoming to all. And it was really through conversations with our many community partners that the concept for an expanded community center that would focus on cultural wellness was born. The city engaged a consultant to complete a feasibility and market study, to engage with community and to identify a fit plan and program for an expanded facility that meets the needs of a changing demographic while being able to serve the region with tournament and gathering space. The proposal before you was developed through an iterative process with community, and it focuses on right-sizing within the physical constraints of the site as well as the financial realities of our community. The future vision of the Brooklyn Center Community Center includes a plan to renovate and expand the existing facility to achieve 110,000 square foot, fully modern space that will serve as an inclusive hub of community health, wellness, and recreation for Brooklyn Center and the surrounding region. And this is not a project that the city could or should take on its own. As the highest taxed community in Hennepin County and residents with the lowest median income, the region stands to benefit from assisting with providing access to health and wellness opportunities for those most in need. A healthier, more prosperous Brooklyn Center benefits the entire region. This project is years in the making and truly encompasses the spirit of Brooklyn Center and the changing needs of our region. Thank you for the opportunity to present this initiative to you. In addition to Councilwoman Butler, I'm also joined by City Manager Dr. Reggie Edwards. And at this time, we'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you. Did Mr. Edwards want to speak or just there for questions?
Just for questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. I want to make note too that a while back, Representative Hassan has joined us. She was doing double duty. She had another committee today. So I want to thank people again for being willing to come during the 1 o'clock tax time and to have the space to have these discussions. With that, members, do I have any questions from committee members on this project? Seeing none, Representative Vang, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you and the committee for your consideration on this bill, and I look forward for your support.
Thank you, Representative Vang. With that, I lay over House File 3760 as amended for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 3822. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move House File 3822 before the committee?
Madam Chair, I will make that motion.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. With the bill before the committee, Representative Liebling, welcome. Please proceed, present your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's been a long time since I've been in front of the property tax or the tax committee for that matter. Pleased to be here today and thank you for hearing this bill, House Bill 3822. So I'm here to present Rochester's efforts to renew our existing local sales tax. This sales tax is a tool that has helped our community in quite a few ways since it was first approved by the legislature in 1983. I want to remind you that Rochester is a regional center for Southeast Minnesota and also a city of the first class. It's an economic engine for the state and also, as you know, a center of hope and healing for the entire world. Mayor Norton is here and she will provide more detail about the proposal today, but I do want to just let you know how important this is to my community and ask you to give it your full consideration. And with that, thank you again. And I would like to turn it over to former state representative and current mayor, Kim Norton.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Nice to see you, Mayor Norton, in this capacity. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name for the record is Kim Norton. I'm mayor of the city of Rochester. It is really wonderful to see so many familiar faces and hear familiar voices throughout this hearing, and lots of new faces too, which has been fun. I'm here to ask for your support, as has been mentioned by Representative Liebling, for our renewal of the existing 0.5% city sales tax that has been granted Rochester back in the early 1980s. A little history, Rochester is the third largest city in the state, and as Rep. Liebling mentioned, it is a city of the first class. We were really pleased this past census cycle to see that our population had grown to 124,599 residents. We encompass 55 square miles, which is about the same as Minneapolis, believe it or not. Well, they're a little more dense than we are. Rochester supports an international airport, a library, a wastewater treatment plant, a transit bus system, also around towns and roads and all that make up a regular city. We are doing a lot of things that the average city in Minnesota isn't doing, and without many of the funding sources available to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. And I think sometimes we need to remind people of that. We are home to the state's largest employer, and we are a regional hub. We, for our workforce and commerce, we host about 30,000 commuters a day in Rochester. This regional traffic absolutely has an impact on our local roads for economic activity. They rely on them. And you'll notice that we have four projects that we're asking for renewal today. These requests are really the needs of Rochester as a regional hub in greater Minnesota. This role in the region warrants this, our local sales tax request. And we are submitting the four projects that you've received in your packets, which is a housing vitality fund, street construction, flood control, and importantly, water quality. And the last is a regional community recreational complex. You can see more about these materials in your handouts. And we do have our Deputy Administrator, Aaron Parrish, here, who could answer some questions about specifics. We've heard presentations since I've been mayor from our public works staff about our needs and the major liability and the need for infusion of funding into the city's budget for our streets. We currently allocate about $9 million a year out of our budget for street reconstruction, but our need is much, much greater, closer to $20 million per year. Housing has been an issue since day one. Approximately a third of the city households in Rochester need affordable housing. I think to remind people that just because we host Mayo Clinic and we do have a lot of healthcare professionals, that's just a portion of our community. There are a lot of other people who live here who struggle to pay their bills. We actually have a great partnerships around housing in our community, but additional resources for the efforts that we need to make a sizable impact are needed. Our city's sales tax has previously been used to build the flood control system that we have in place. So if you come downtown, you'll see that we have a flood control system that was completed many, many years ago now. That was based on 100-year events. And we've had four of those 100-year events in the past 15 years. Thankfully, that flood control system was in place, but it nears breaching now, which is kind of shocking, actually. Each time it floods, the system protects $250 million in property, and we need to build the system out so we can be more resilient to these conditions in the city. And understanding that water comes into our community from the rural areas, and we deal a lot with silt and other issues in our lakes, our river and lake in the community. Additionally, the category of street and roads funding, which I know gets sensitive for some, the legislation made it so that 87 counties in the state can collect a wheelage tax, and Rochester is larger than 77 of those 87 counties. So we do have a lot of use of our roads and not access to the funding that we need to continue to repair them and replace them. And some of them, as I'm sure you know, are getting old enough that they need full replacement. No longer can they just be repaired. And I know you know that from hearing your own discussions up there about statewide roads. So our local sales tax has been quite successful. These are the sorts of tools that the legislature has granted for communities that are overburdened, and we would like to continue to use ours. I'd say, you know, I did mention that we've been responsible with the funding and successful. This is a key fiscal building block to run our city. We're not asking again for a new tax. This is a renewal. We are a Greater Minnesota Regional Center and an entity unto ourselves in the southern part of the state. And I honestly don't know how we would function without the continuation of the sales tax. It's definitely part of how we run our city in the past, and we'll hopefully be able to do so in the future. And so I'll just close by saying we chose these four projects. In the past, we didn't have to just choose four. We could choose more than four. And we had a large public process to do that in the past. And we will involve the public as we move ahead with your approval on these four projects. It's going to be a very different process for us. But we need to make an impact, a big impact, with the resources and tools that are available to us. And we think these four projects will allow us to be able to do that. So we really appreciate the committee's consideration, and really hope you'll allow us this continued use of this tool to provide important services and infrastructure. So Aaron Parrish, as I mentioned before, our Deputy City Administrator is here, and Heather Corcoran, our policy analysis. So if you have questions, not only is Representative Liegeling potentially welcome, she is always welcome to answer them if she knows them, but she can also hand it off to some of our administrators as well. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mary Norton. With that, I think we'll go to member questions for anyone that's here that can answer them. Representative Vice Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a quick comment, I think. The use of local option sales taxes for affordable housing would be just a really an expansion and a departure from the way that we, from the uses that we've kind of allowed these to be applied to. And as some of my colleagues may know, I mean, I chair the Preventing Homelessness Committee or division. I serve on the housing committee. I'm a housing advocate. Housing issues are impacting my community really profoundly. It's probably like actually the first thing that I hear about when I go and knock on doors in my community. It's the highest, kind of like the highest priority. But I guess, you know, I just, and this is my broad kind of opinion about local option sales taxes, is that they exist as a departure from a deal that we made in our state in the 1970s about how we were going to fund the basic functions of government in such a way that folks who lived in communities that have, that don't have big retail tax bases, that don't have big net tax capacity, you know, kind of that you can go to levy, that communities that do and don't have those features as part of their economic mix would all have access to, you know, equal access to the goods that you need to have a good life and the basic services that government needs to provide its citizens. And so, you know, local sales taxes are our most regressive source, one of the three or four most regressive taxes that we have in our arsenal. You know, the income tax is the most progressive. And so when we do general fund spending, then we're relying on a mix of sales and income taxes rather than you know, with a local option sales tax, you're just on that most regressive form of tax. But so I guess I just don't want, like, I don't want anybody to be surprised that, like, the housing aspect of your ask is a big departure, and I'm going to have a hard time, you know, supporting it at this time, because I just feel like if we want to do that, if we want to go in the direction of using local option sales taxes for housing, then we need to have a bigger discussion about that as a legislature. You know, I am, of course, really in favor of, one of the things that I see is like that there haven't been, we haven't developed like the mix of revenue sources for housing that we have for some other kind of areas in our state budget is something that I've observed. And so that's one of like my questions when I talk to people who know the state government really well. I'm like, how do I set up some of these like secret weird little pots of money for housing that we have for a bunch of other things in state government? Because I really, like, we need to be doing that. We need to make, you know, housing a more central to the work that we do as a legislature. And so in that spirit, I really appreciate this being brought forward because I think that, like, it's a question that we need to ask ourselves, right? Is like, how are we going to sustainably fund housing moving forward when we have no dedicated source of funding for it in our budget? There is none. So, like, I want us to have this conversation, but if we do this next year, we'll see a lot of communities that have that, that are lucky enough, right, to Representative Hurtas's point, to have that retail tax base to go to for, you know, for goods for communities, and using that for housing. And then what about those folks who live in communities where they don't have that benefit? We need to figure out how to stay committed to our deal in Minnesota that we've had in place for 50 years, which is that we want funding to be distributed equitably. We want good things to be distributed equitably across our state, and for it not to be dependent on like whether you have a really good retail center, because it's like that's not the fault of those people who live in a place where they don't have that, and then they shouldn't be implicitly kind of penalized in the access to good services because they don't happen to have been born in that community. So I really appreciate this, that you brought this forward, and I hope that it compels us to have just more of a conversation about how it is that we diversify those sources of revenue that we can use to meet the very real and housing needs across our state that I know you guys are feeling really acutely in Rochester. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gomez, and thank you for your work on your committee and on the Housing Committee and Representative Hausman, Chair Hausman's commitment to affordable housing too. I share your concern that local option sales tax is really not the vehicle to be spending affordable housing. To go towards affordable housing, we have to do a much better job as a state to be investing in that. If you could look at the document we have attached about the, we have a memo talking about the changes that were made in 2019 previously to me with this process, and then the changes we made in 2021 defining capital projects. Roads are not in that as well. I understand that as a regional center is one thing, but you're also a city of the first class, which is a little different. There's only four of you, so we may be able to continue the discussion on roads, but the affordable housing piece there, the nexus and nexus part of that and the regional part and the people that will be paying the sales tax won't, coming through town won't have that access to that affordable housing because they're not staying in town. They're coming down for your wonderful recreation center and a lot of sporting events, which I know is part of this proposal as well. And the flood mitigation is desperately needed as well. But the other two projects I have concerns with too, and just wanted to kind of lift that up. Members, any other questions?
Well, Madam Chair, could
I'm going to go right back to you. Yep, just a minute, Representative Liebling. Sure. Just checking to make sure there's no other questions. All right, Representative Liebling.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the good discussion, Representative Gomez. We really should find a time to have a couple of hours of this discussion offline. But one thing I want to say is that the people coming into our community, a lot of them are coming to work. And they are moving into our community to find housing often and to find jobs. So this isn't just people coming in for recreation and going home at night. This is, we truly are a regional center. And I don't know, maybe the city manager has the data on this, but when we talk about having a big retail tax base, remember a lot of our tax base is nonprofits. A lot of our land is taken up with people who don't pay taxes. So we're not in the same position as you might think of some other cities that you think are doing really well. The other thing I want to say is let's not let the best be the enemy of the good. We all know that we need to constantly keep working to make our system more fair and make, and to equalize opportunity across the state. That's what we have LGA for. That's what we've had other tools for. That's what you all have the fiscal disparities pool for up in the metro area. We don't have that down in Rochester. And other tools that have been available. So, I don't have all this at my fingertips, but I would just say that the rules kind of got changed under Rochester. And this has been something that we've relied on for many, many years. And there could probably be some adjustment. I won't speak for the council or for the mayor on, adjusting any of these projects, but this is something cities relied on for a very long time. And I would just be very distressed to see this pulled out from under us. And with that, I will turn it over to the mayor. I'm sure she would have something to say as well if there are no other questions.
Mayor Norton.
Thank you. And Rep. Gomez, I've been working on affordable housing and housing, alongside you for a number of years, and certainly since I've been mayor. And I didn't go into a lot of the detail in my brief testimony, but we are unique. We get far less CDBG funding than other similar sized cities, and it's so frustrating. That affected us with CARES Act and ARPA dollars too. I watched much smaller communities get as much or more than we did, and that's continuing moving ahead. I noticed in the recent ARPA bills. We also have, we showed the need for 18,000 housing units through 2030. We've done several studies paid for those, particularly senior housing. And, as I've been working in the homeless realm trying to get supportive housing as well. The greatest need is for that 30 to 55% area median income housing options at 70, 90% AMI. Are also needed to address the majority of new job growth in the construction, education, and healthcare realms. But we've only had 55 units, less than 4% of the 1,300 newly constructed units in the past 10 years that were affordable. the people that come in and develop aren't developing affordable units. And I served on those committees with others in the past to hear, even in rural Minnesota, that you can't build a home that's affordable just with the cost of construction and materials any longer. We've got to do something. And we talked about the use of roads. Those people that we're talking about using our roads are having to come to work from the smaller communities around us because they can't afford to live in Rochester. So they, and that's great. I mean, I think it's great for those communities outside to have people live there, but it's not giving people the choice to even live in our community because they can't afford it. So, you know, there's many arguments, and maybe Mr. Parrish would like to address them as an expert.
Your Honor.
Mr. Parrish, briefly.
Yeah, Chair, members of the committee, really appreciate the opportunity. I would just say, I mean, we know a few of these proposals are advancing the conversation in terms of where the opportunity is for local sales tax. But it is a reflection of what we feel is very important locally. We certainly could have brought you a maintenance facility, more park projects, or other items. However, we feel these items are very important. I would also say, as a regional center with not a lot of other supportive infrastructure around us, as the mayor said, we have 18,000 units we need to construct, but we have the services that folks need in order to be successful and think about affordable housing as affordable living. We have transit, over 16 cents on the dollar of people's budget goes to transportation costs. There's no other effective and meaningful transit in and around our region. And so we have the services people need to be successful. We know this is an important local conversation. We know it's an important state level conversation. And I would just maybe leave the committee with what the mayor started with, and that we experience significant overburden. We do invest significant money in our property tax, but we also invest $500,000 a year in an international airport. We invest $8 million a year in a library system, whereas many communities, particularly in the Twin Cities, do not have to do that. And we have just many, many other, areas that we ultimately invest in. Regional parks, as another example, we don't have some of the benefits that are accrued by others based on the Met Council services that are provided. And as well, we are the transit provider. We have to invest in that space. So, we carry a heavy load. We serve an important mission. And we would just really appreciate your consideration and ongoing dialogue in this space.
Thank you, Mr. Parrish. Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you so much, Madam Chair. Maybe this is the time for me to give my annual local option sales tax speech. I've never been a big fan. In fact, when Ann Lincheski was chair, we actually halted local option sales taxes for 2 years. And I mean, the big concern is when local government aid was established, it was in state law, as Representative Gomez said, local option sales taxes were prohibited. And I've always considered local government aid as the great equalizer, recognizing that some cities that don't get it, but that's because they've got a pretty high tax base. But it's been the great equalizer. And the one concern I've always had about local option sales taxes is that it creates a greater disparity between the haves and the have-nots. Because if you've got the retail center and capacity, you have a great ability to raise revenue for all sorts of things, where if you're a smaller city that may not benefit from some of these amenities in the larger regional centers, you don't have the wherewithal to do a local option sales tax, but yet you fall further behind because you can't do things other cities can. And so I've always taken a very narrow view, and that's why I think the work of Chair Joachim and this committee in the last few years has really been good in that it has tried to set some guardrails to assure we don't get out of whack with kind of this equalization. Otherwise, to me, I think it throws local government aid and credibility out there where it could be curtailed. People could say, all right, if that's a great equalizer, let's start counting local option sales taxes as part of your LGA formula need. And we wouldn't want that. But I mean, I think some of the important things would be things like, sewer and water and streets. Those are some things that we narrowed things down to just a couple years ago. And my thought there is with transportation, there's other ways to get those funds.
And in fact, if you're a city under 5,000, under the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, you don't get any extra dollars, where if you're a city over 5,000, you do get municipal state aid. So there are other areas, and when we start funding streets, we're also taking pressure off the real need to generate more revenue for transportation. And also with sewer and water, you've got the PFA, Public Facilities Authority, where if you're giving certain cities the authority to do that with a local option sales tax, you allow them to kind of jump the line on who's waiting in line there. So, and then you get to affordable housing. I think that's quite an expansion of a use there. And it would be, I think setting some precedents with something like that. So, these are all tough decisions. I do think the chair has done a good job of setting the parameters, and the parameters that are out there that cities are aware of, going into the process. And, my thought is either do these parameters or you somehow look at eliminating the ability to do local option sales taxes. Otherwise, it's just going to be out there. It's just going to be greatly expanded. And, we've raised our sales tax rate, I think, by 0.5% or 0.4% in the last 5 or 6 years, without anyone voting to do that, but just by increasing the number of cities that have the local option sales tax, our effective rate, I think, is up to like 7.49. So, here we talk about increasing taxes. We've actually done that without the legislature saying we're going to increase sales taxes by a half percentage point. But in effect, that's what we've done. So I guess this was my time for my annual local option sales tax speech, and where I do support limiting it and putting guardrails if we're going to not only have a viable system for cities coming in and asking for these, but in my regard, if we're going to maintain the credibility and solvency of the program, I think is so valuable, and that's local government aid. So those are my comments, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Marquardt. You and I have shared many of these same ideas. In fact, you and I just had a similar conversation on these very issues on the floor just the other day in one of my arguments why you should hear one of the bills I have. But anyway, you walked into that one. Anyway, but I'd like to emphasize what Chair Marquardt said, and that these local option sales taxes are causing greater disparities between the haves and have-nots in a regional way, because the smaller communities around these regional areas are oftentimes compelled to do their shopping for obvious reasons within those communities. And at the same time, it's funding or taking dollars out of their small communities where maybe they would like to have a hardware store or something else that would serve their needs, so they wouldn't have to drive 15 miles to the next biggest town to get some of the things they need. So, housing is a big expansion of local option sales tax. And I did mention to Chair Marquardt, I think a year and a half ago, at the rate that we're seeing all of these local option sales taxes coming in, we might as well just raise the sales tax statewide and give everybody a 0.5% and be done with it. But that's not something that I advocate for or want to do. But nonetheless, this is the trend. And thank you for sharing your data about what the effective sales tax rate is because of all of the local option sales taxes that we have been approved through the legislature. So thank you, Madam Chair. And I won't ask Rochester what your net capacity is either, but I think you are significant enough and large enough that you can handle many things within your own budgets.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hertas. Any other member questions? With that, Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And it's really, wish I was back in the tax committee, because it's great to have these thoughtful conversations. I just would like to thank everyone for hearing the bill and just remind you, this is a renewal of a 0.5% sales tax that Rochester's had since the 80s. And we really do depend on it. And, I'm sure it's, the issue about people shopping in other places. You know, a lot of people shop online now. They don't drive anywhere to shop. I'm not how that influences all of this, but I think it does make a difference. People have a lot of choice now about where they go to shop. So just want us to think about that. But I just appreciate your hearing the bill today, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. With that, I lay over House File 38. Oops, I'm at the wrong spot here. Nope. House File 3822 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. With that, members, we're going to be taking a short recess. And when I say short, I mean short. We will come back at 3 p.m. We just want to give folks time to stand up and stretch their legs, maybe grab another cup of coffee. And when we come back, Representative Lewick will be presenting his bill. So with that, we are in recess. I call this meeting back to order. The next item on our agenda is House File 3829. Representative Hertaus, would you like to move House File 3829 before the division? Actually,
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'll move House File 3829 for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Sorry, I kind of sprung that on you. I should have given people a moment to settle in. Next up, we have House File 3829, Representative Lewick. I see you also have an amendment. Representative Hertaus, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
So move, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Before we vote on the amendment, would you like to briefly describe your amendment?
Yes, what that does is removes an element that, as we've, Chair Marquardt mentioned, would more properly be funded through the PFA system. It would be part of the sewer sanitary system. So we're removing that element from the bill.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. With that, members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote, so please unmute yourself. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lewick, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You got a bright committee here, but I'm wearing these sunglasses. I had minor surgery this morning, eye surgery, so... House File 3829, what that does, it would provide the opportunity for City of Aiken to put before their residents a proposal to impose a 1% sales tax. The intention there would be to raise $8.3 million for a new municipal building, as well as $1 million for investment to improve their city park and trail system. We've got the city administrator, Mark Skibich, with us, and he can go into detail. Also, you have a summary provided by the city of Aiken that provides some more background information on tax capacity, levies, those types of things. With that, I'll turn it back to Madam Chair and our testifiers.
Here to testify is Aiken City Manager Mike Skirich. Please state your name for the record so I can hear you pronounce it.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, all. My name is Mike Skirich. I am the City Administrator in Aiken. I want to thank you all for considering our proposal and having us in this afternoon to talk to you. As you go through the narrative and just a quick little overview of everything, I think it becomes the first thing or some of our financial realities. And I think that basically our tax capacity is about 1.6 million. We're taxing at about 104% now. There are about 150 million in non-revenue properties in our city. And that's a 2022 estimate. When I talked to the assessor and he was reconfiguring things, we were at about 120 million. Last year with the revaluation, they were looking at 25 to 28% on a lot of properties. So we're right about $150 million. Then we're going to have an expansion at our hospital, which is going to be about another $60 million. So we're looking at about a couple hundred million in non-revenue properties, and the people of Aiken are, trying to pull the wagon here, and our taxing authority is only, you know, like 1.6 million. I think if you, Chair Yoakum asked about our levy increases and how aggressive we've been in the past few years, I think as you look at them, we were 21%, 14, 10, 9. We had one small year in 2018, and then 2017 and 16, we're back in that 8.5% to 9% range. So the council has been aggressive, and I think our, you know, our reality is that because we're covering so much area, we just, our revenues are not growing as quickly as our expenses are. And I think a lot of small communities are in the same type of a situation, but it's impacted the city greatly. I'm new here and so is the mayor. And so as we're coming into this situation, in the last couple of years, they spent about $1.2 million making up for budget shortfalls. Part of that's more effective budgeting and capital planning, but things have come along that happen to cities, and you need to have the proper amount of money sitting around in case it does, and they've had a tough time the last couple of years. So as you look at the financial implications of the whole thing, I think Vice Chair Gomez asked, you know, who's going to end up paying for this, and how's that going to work out? And the last time we talked about, you know, how many places are in the 12 township area in the city that we serve, how many of those people are seasonal and don't actually live here. I believe that's about 43% of our total. And we notice that when the vacation season starts here, weekends and you know, come Thursday, Friday, like that, we, our traffic and activity in this community swelled dramatically. And that's a real positive thing, you know, because we're getting people through here. But nonetheless, that's it strains our resources, and that's kind of where we're at. And I believe, looking at things, that a large portion of the tax would be paid by regional commerce and tourists and seasonal visitors who have vacation homes and things like that here. And as you look at the whole deal, I think that it would help us to take care of the things that we need to get taken care of from a community standpoint, in talking with citizens that come to our council meetings and things like that. They're concerned about our local property taxes. And there's been suggestions that we should have a local sales tax so that we're, the people in town aren't paying for everything that's happening around our region and the 12 townships that we serve. So I think it's a pretty, if you look at the numbers, you can see why we're struggling. And so it's pretty clear that's what's happening. I think it's also clear that there's the potential for a lot of people from the outside to help contribute to this. And those people also get to use our resources. They have fire protection and police protection from us when they need it. They also use our park as a regional resource. Our plans for our upgrading of the park are all regionally driven. We're working with groups from Grand Rapids all the way down the Mississippi to here, trying to create some different ecotourism and things like that. We're also working with the county on our park system to extend some of the trails and ATV things that were became possible because we had some old property called the Tank Trails, where they used to actually come here and try out, the National Guard used to try out tanks here and stuff. So we've got a lot of stuff like that going on that's going to be available to all the people in the region who would be paying the tax. And there doesn't seem to be a big concern about us having that. I think a larger concern seems to be in the comments that I see, are people are way concerned about their property taxes. And it's understandable. That's kind of how they feel. So looking at the big picture, the biggest piece of the pie is you know, public services, safety, and working on a building and stuff like that. The buildings we have are very old. You know, they're probably 50s, 60s type things. There are structural issues. There are leaking roof issues. There are just reasons that they're not particularly efficient anymore. And by doing something different, we should be able to lower our operating costs and improve our sustainability over time and still serve all the people that we take care of as a regional center. So that's pretty much the basis of it. And if you have questions, I'd be glad to try to answer any that anybody has.
Thank you, Mr. Skrbich. Members, any questions for Mr. Skrbich or Representative Lewick? Seeing none, Representative Lewick, final word.
Well, thank you, Chair Joaquin and committee members. Just to point out the situation with the facilities, the city manager right now is sitting in a leased office, not City Hall, because the facilities where the mayor and the staff are actually rental property. The City Hall is is now the police force and the fire department have had to expand. So that gives you a perception of why they're looking for a new building so we can get at least get the staff in the same building as where they actually hold their council meetings and those types of things. So thank you, members. Appreciate it. Please consider it.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. With that, I lay over House File 3829 as amended for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 3473. Representative Fisher, would you like to move House File 3473 before the division?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 3473 before the division.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Freiberg, I see that you also have an amendment. So, Representative Fisher, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to move the A1 amendment to House File 3473.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. With that, Representative Freiberg, welcome to the committee, and would you please describe your amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill as drafted would have waived the requirement that there be a separate question for each of the three projects described in the bill. The amendment just gets rid of that exception and makes it more consistent with current practice.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Members, with that, we'll vote on the amendment. It'll be a voice vote, so please unmute. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Freiberg, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the City of Golden Valley is requesting a local sales tax authority of 0.5% to help fund a new remote fire station, a public safety building, and a public works building. The City of Golden Valley is having quite a few issues with its buildings, which the testifiers will speak about. And the fire department is looking to change from a on-call volunteer system, which I know you know about, Chair Joaquim. So I won't belabor that. And I know we are on a tight time frame, so I will just with that turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. With us today, we have the Physical Development Director of Golden Valley, Mark Novinsky. Mr. Novinsky, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Novinsky. I'm the Physical Development Director at the City of Golden Valley. With me this afternoon as well is Bethany Brunsell, our Assistant Fire Chief, who will speak to a few of the issues that our fire department is experiencing. I'd like to thank Representative Freiberg for authoring our bill as well. As Representative Freiberg noted, we are looking at a 0.5% sales tax to help with the construction of a remote fire station, a new public safety building, and a new public works facility. The city has arrived at the conclusion for these needs following a year-long analysis of our facilities, which included guidance from a resident and business task force and three community engagement events. In your packet is a summary of the study, the issues that we face, and the recommendations that came out of that study. So I won't go into a great detail, amount of detail, I guess, other than to say, our facilities generally range in age from 30 to 60 years old. They no longer accommodate modern vehicles or modern equipment or modern operations. Our police officers do not have the locker room storage that they need, and they're operating on multiple levels and in a very inefficient way. due to construction type and of our buildings and the land limitations that we have, we did look at the potential for expanding and remodeling our buildings. But because of those restrictions, we're just not able to cost effectively do that or even meet just basic space requirements. The goal of our study was really to help us develop a long-term phased approach to developing and addressing the city's building needs. We did rely on a number of other studies that have been done in the past, generally over the past 10 years or so. The maybe most notable study of those was our 2016 fire rescue report that identified the need for the city to shift from a three-station paid-on-call staffing model to a two-station duty crew model. And if it's okay with the chair, I would like to introduce Assistant Fire Chief Bethany Brincell to talk a little bit about what our staffing needs are in the fire service.
Assistant Fire Chief Brincell, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, my name is Bethany Brincell. I'm Assistant Fire Chief with Golden Valley Fire. And as been mentioned, we are facing, like many departments in Minnesota, challenge where we need to look at our paid-on-call staffing model and change that to we're looking at a duty crew model where we have our stations staffed by part-time firefighters. And with part of the research that's been done, it's been identified that a two-station is going to be the right size for our department instead of three stations. Our current stations are all over 40 years old right now. They are not big enough to safely accommodate the size of modern fire trucks. They also are not good in terms of cancer prevention issues that are out there that right now our firefighters have to get dressed and their gear is stored right next to where diesel exhaust is from our trucks. Additionally, our stations being more than 40 years old, this was before female firefighters were common. So we need to make sure that our current stations are accommodating for both male and female firefighters. So for equity for men and women, for safety, we're really in a place where we do need to have a new fire station built, for two new stations built, I should say, to accommodate not only our staffing changes, but even just our current operations are not suitable for our current stations.
Thank you, Assistant Chief Brincell. Members, I have a quick question. As a reminder, I know when we met before, we have, as a committee, have been discussing public works buildings kind of being on that cusp of whether or not they should be under the local option sales tax or something a city should provide. But you had a unique issue with having to move public safety around to get the fire stations in, or will either Mr. Novinsky or Assistant Chief Brincell, Mr. Novinsky, why don't you explain that to the committee?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Yes, our challenge, we have a couple of goals that we need to meet. So we've talked about the remote fire station. We also have a public safety building that includes both our police and fire department. That's currently on our city campus in the heart of downtown next to our city hall facility, and also right next to our public works buildings. We're all on one big campus. We need to move our public works facilities out of downtown. We're a pedestrian-oriented area, and we have conflicts with pedestrians and large vehicles. And public works, as you can imagine, just isn't a great fit in the downtown area. To relocate and build a new public safety facility, however, and meet the goals and objectives that the city has, we need to relocate our public works facilities first. They're kind of taking up the biggest chunk of our downtown block. And it's important that we believe to keep our public safety facility in the downtown and part of our city campus for access to public safety from our citizens and transparency and all the good and desirable things that we're trying to do in terms of engagement with public safety and our citizens. So we don't want to just push them off to some remote location separate from our city hall area. So public works needs to move first, then we would construct public safety in the downtown and then also construct a remote fire station that Assistant Chief Brincell described for you. So
thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and I just, you know, in the interest of being, you know, fully transparent with the committee, we are looking at a cost, a projected cost of about $134 million over our scheduled 18-year build out. That 18-year build out schedule came from our study as we tried to figure out what is a schedule, a rate of investment that our community can absorb. We are a higher, you know, we're a high debt city. We've invested heavily in our infrastructure over the years, and we have some debt that we have to drive down. We've been working to do that. The projected revenue from the local sales tax is about $84 million over a 30-year period. And we are also looking to other options. We know that there are some opportunities for bonding dollars that we're pursuing. We know that we'll have to probably increase our levy to pay for some additional debt. We've also are looking at some options to explore federal funding. I'd like to just note that Golden Valley's population, daytime population, increases from about to about 30,000 employees that work in Golden Valley. Our nightly population, our residents, are only about 22,000. So we do have a big influx of people during the day that do rely on our city services that do not live here. So with that, Madam Chair, I would stand for any questions that you or the committee might have. And I thank you again for hearing our bill.
Thank you, Mr. Novinsky. Members, do we have any questions? Seeing none. With that, Representative Feiberg, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the committee's consideration of this. You know, it's an important, these are important projects in a city that's got some unique circumstances facing it. So just appreciate your positive consideration.
Thank you, Representative Feiberg. With that, I lay over House File 3473 is amended for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 3703. Representative Hertaus, would you like to move House File 3703 before the division?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 3703 for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Representative Grossel, welcome to the committee, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for giving us this time to present this bill, House File 3703, a bill relating to the taxation, local sales, and use, authorizing the city of Black Duck to impose to make some upgrades and renovations where needed. And Madam Chair, I'll just brevity is our friend, as we discussed the other day. So I'm going to turn it over to the Black Duck City Administrator, Christina Regas, to go more into detail as to what the city is proposing.
Thank you, Representative Grossel. Black Duck City Administrator Christina Regas, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Christina Regas. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Black Duck, and I'm pleased to have this opportunity to testify on behalf of the City of Black Duck to endorse House File 3703 to adopt a 0.5% local sales tax to support City of Black Duck regional amenities. For those of you that are not aware, the City of Black Duck is a small northern Minnesota community and draws visitors from all over Minnesota, North and South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. People travel to Black Duck all year round to engage in seasonal outdoor activities. Several people are relocating and retiring to Black Duck as it offers a unique location. It is the gateway to the Chippewa National Forest, has a small, wonderful school district, is the second largest city in Beltrami County, and has quick access to a regional airport and hospital. Minnesota State Highway 71 and 72 both intersect in Black Duck, and according to MnDOT, average about 4,900 vehicles passing through that corner each year, bringing a lot of regional traffic to the city. Black Duck serves smaller northern communities, as well as it is minutes away from Itasca County and Coochiching. People that call Black Duck home do so for its remote location, but also the basic necessities a small city provides. We are asking for this 0.5% sales tax to support our amenities. The first is our city-owned campground, Pine Tree Park. This is used by visitors and locals and has been since 1972. The campground provides 32 campsites on the east side of beautiful Black Duck Lake. And other than two Minnesota DNR boat launches, Pine Tree Park is the only accessible public property on Black Duck Lake. Pine Tree Park provides campers and travelers a public RV dump station and is the only one located between Bemidji State Park and Big Falls Campground, which is a distance between those two of 67 miles. Funding from this proposal, the local sales tax would support improvements to the aging water and sewer utilities and provide full RV hookups to the campground. The City of Black Duck also offers visitors and the community a public walking and biking trail and a wayside rest. Funding from our local sales tax would assist in resurfacing our existing trail and improve playground equipment and provide year-round walking for children. Our Black Duck Golf Course was built in 1938 and has seen several improvements since the early 1990s, including a new clubhouse, cart shed, course equipment, and irrigation to our tee boxes and greens. The course is only a 9-hole course, but it is a par 3 and very challenging to avid golfers and is used by visitors of the community, our local golf teams, resort goers, and campers alike. The golf course has currently over 75 members, many of which are snowbirds and long-standing community members. In 2021, Black Duck Golf Course had a record number of walk-on traffic with over 3,300 rounds of golf played. The course is adjacent to the city campground and just steps away from Black Duck Lake. Funding from this proposal would support improvements to the existing irrigation system, extending the lines to our fairways. We also have a Black Duck Library, and it is a branch of the Kitchigami Regional Library System, and currently operates from a modestly sized building equipped to serve local residents with a full library system, free high-speed broadband and technology use, and free summer children's programs. Visitors at the library take advantage of programs offered by Black Duck Community Education. In 2021, the library had over 3,500 visitors, and summer children's reading programs served 32 participants. Funding from this local sales tax proposal would support an expansion to our existing library facility to provide more people access to the programs it offers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Regas. Members, any questions for Ms. Regas or Representative Grassel? Seeing none. With that, I lay over House File 3703 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division Report. And I want to just make sure, is Representative Becker Finn available for her bill? Awesome. Great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to let you know.
Oh, sorry, Representative Grassel. I'm so sorry. I forgot to give you the last word. Why don't you go ahead first?
You did just fine. You got it laid over. So that's all I needed.
Thank you, Representative Grassel. I'm sorry about that. It's been a long day. The next item on our agenda is House File 3194. Representative Becker Finn, would you like to move your bill before our division?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I would like to move House File 3194 in front of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Yeah, thank you. So I feel like we've gone through a lot of this, so I'm just going to try to be one of the presentations that's short and to the point. The request here is a 0.5% local sales tax. There are three items that the City of Roseville is looking at funding. There is a maintenance facility, a pedestrian bridge. So if folks are familiar with Rosedale, the Highway 36 Snelling interchange is where we're looking at putting that bridge. And then upgrades and expansion of our passport and license center, which is very highly used by a lot of folks from around the region. And so those are the three things we're looking at funding. And with that, I will turn it over to our mayor, Mayor Dan Rowe.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. Mayor of Roseville, Dan Rowe, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for considering Roseville's bill. Again, I'm Mayor Dan Rowe. I usually don't have too much trouble with people pronouncing it, but spelling sometimes becomes a challenge for folks. Appreciate your consideration of our request to go to the voters of Roseville for our 0.5% local sales tax. For a little bit of context, in Roseville's case, we are a net contributor to fiscal disparities, and we don't receive local government aid. Roseville, we're very proud to have a very vibrant retail and commercial sector. We certainly understand we receive a lot of benefits from that in terms of the relative weight of our local levy on our residents as well as our businesses. We do also know that because we have that significant commercial and retail sector, there are additional costs that we see in terms of whether it's public safety or just other maintenance costs, things like that, infrastructure costs related to that. And I think what we've been hearing from our community over the years is the feeling that while we do significantly benefit in terms of our property tax levy from our local commercial activity, the sense in the community is that perhaps the balance isn't quite there. And so we have been looking for opportunities, understanding our responsibility to manage our property tax funding and our utility fee funding and make sure that we're providing for the needs of a community and our visitors through those means as much as possible, but also looking for opportunities that might make sense to take advantage of the ability to do a limited local option sales tax for specific projects as is outlined in the legislation. So with that, just a little more context, Roseville actually borders on both Minneapolis and St. Paul directly. We also have additional 8 communities that surround Roseville, and within 15 miles, we have about 1.5 million residents. Each day, our evening population, to sort of parallel Golden Valley's presentation, our evening population is about 36,000. We do during the day have about 34,000 people working in Roseville at a couple of thousand businesses, both retail as well as significant commercial presence, such as Roseville's own Old Dutch Potato Chips. In addition to that, we have both I-35W and Highway 36 going through our community. And so we have, tens of thousands of commuters that require, emergency services occasionally from the city. And in addition to that, we have about 40,000 shoppers a day just at Rosedale alone. And of course, Rosedale is the center of a larger, regional retail center, if you will. So that's sort of the context here and some of the background. I would note also that in our situation in Roseville, we have approximately 70 plus square feet of retail space per capita, whereas I think usually the nearest competitors in terms of retail space per capita, as it's looked at regionally or even nationwide, are more in the 50 range. So we're a significantly smaller community with a fairly large commercial and retail establishment. So this is also the context of our ask here. And certainly we wouldn't be asking for local option sales tax if there weren't the costs associated with having those commercial establishments in our community, in addition to the benefits that we see. With that, the projects are, as was mentioned, a maintenance facility at a cost of about $42 million, a license and passport center at a cost of about $7 million, and as was mentioned, the Highway 36 pedestrian bridge at Snelling at a cost of about $16 million. These costs all include the planning design as well as the construction costs. All of these would be funded through a 16-year 0.5% sales tax. And as we all know, the sales tax would go away once either the projects are paid for or the 16 years ends, whichever comes first. And we don't at this time anticipate that Roseville would come back, although I don't want to promise for future mayors and councils, we don't anticipate we would necessarily be coming back for a continuation of that local sales tax once those projects are completed. Just a little more about each of the projects, and I'll start with the pedestrian crossing. So right now, as Representative Becker Finn noted, the crossing at 36 and Snelling is entirely a vehicle crossing. There are no pedestrian facilities on Snelling Avenue, although I imagine people might attempt it, but they're taking their lives in their own hands, being that it's a cloverleaf interchange and the speed limit is 50, and who knows how fast cars are going. And so we have a fairly significant multifamily population on the south side of 36 that is anticipated to grow as we look at transit-oriented redevelopment of the Harmar Mall area over the years. Certainly in our planning through work with Met Council, we've been identifying that area as a targeted transit-oriented design, which means mixed use, more high-density residential. And in addition, at Rosedale's own plans call for hundreds of units of multifamily residential on the north side of 36. And the nearest pedestrian crossing in that area is to either go a half mile west to Fairview or a half mile east to Hamlin Avenue, both of which have narrow sidewalk facilities and aren't really designed for significant pedestrian or bicycle use. And both of those streets also don't have significant shoulders for bicycle use. And bicycle commuting is a pretty popular thing, both for Roseville residents as well as residents who pass through Roseville as part of their commute. So that's the pedestrian bridge. License and Passport Center, we do approximately 200,000 transactions each year. About 80% of the customers, based on recent surveys, are outside of Roseville. And so it's a very regional type of use. I'm frequently complimented by my fellow mayors and council members outside of Roseville for the service they receive there when they come to renew their various DNR licenses or vehicle licenses or get a passport. And so that facility is, once again, has that regional benefit and is about a $7 million cost. And then the maintenance facility is really an ability for us to be able to adequately maintain and operate our maintenance fleet and equipment to serve both streets, which obviously mostly serve local traffic on local streets, but more importantly, stormwater, sewer, and water facilities, which have a significant service to the commercial activities in Roseville. And so that's the regional significance of that, is to serve those visitors to the community. And more information on all those projects is in the information we've provided. So I'll stop there and stand for any questions. And I just note that our Public Works Director, Mark Culver, is with us in case the mayor can't answer any of the questions that come up.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mayor Rowe. Representative Becker Finn, any other additional comments before I go to member questions?
No, I feel like it's pretty straightforward and happy to answer any questions.
All right, members, any member questions? I don't think people got the extra coffee I did during break. With that, Representative Becker Finn, final comments.
I just really appreciate you considering this bill. I wouldn't be bringing this bill forward if I didn't think it was necessary. And I think, you know, we're using the tools that we have to make our community better, and hope that members will support it.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. With that, I lay over House File 3194 for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. Next up on our agenda is House File 3763. Representative Hertaz, would you like to move House File 3763 before the division?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 3763, Representative Keel from Grand Forks, be moved for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Representative Keel, I see you have an amendment. Representative Hertaz, would you like to move the A2 amendment?
So moved.
Representative Keel, could you please describe your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very much appreciated. I'm going to correct my Representative Hertaz. It is not Grand Forks, but East Grand Forks. Very, very important in my world, east of the Red River and in Minnesota. So anyway, the amendment is to address the finances so that there is a limit to the request on the sales tax that has been proposed. So with
there's
that,
only one Grand Forks as far as we're concerned.
Yeah. And it's not East Grand. So thank you. Madam Chair, would you, just like my testifiers, to explain the bill?
No, why don't we, we'll put the amendment
on pass it first.
So, yeah. So, are there any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote, so please unmute. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Representative Keel, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate you hearing this bill. I have with me Mayor, I almost referred to the former mayor. I apologize. Now I'm stuttering. Steve Gander, who is here with us today, and then Mr. Reed Hutnan, who is also part of this, head of this project. So I'd like them to explain the project and why we're requesting the sales tax. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Mayor of East Grand Forks, Steve Gander, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Okay, my name is Steve Gander, and I am Mayor of East Grand Forks. Madam Chair, thank you so much for this opportunity to make this presentation. Members of the committee, the reason that we're doing this in the first place, as most of you probably know, what started it was the fact that we need to revamp our refrigeration systems to be compliant with the EPA phase-out of ozone-depleting substances. And R22 is considered a Class 2 ozone-depleting substance, which means it cannot be produced imported, but that existing supplies can be used up until they're all gone. Of course, with the ozone layer depleted, UV radiation reaches harmful levels. The need to eliminate R22 and protection of the ozone layer shows the regional significance of this project, since we all spend time outside and we all share the same atmosphere. But once we begin a significant construction project on one of our buildings, we need to get caught up on some ADA requirements, which is a good thing, but it adds millions of dollars to the cost. Along with that, there are some air quality issues to attend to. 20 years ago, it was kind of a badge of honor to have the stinkiest locker room in the whole district. But now we realize that that's actually going to exacerbate asthma and other respiratory diseases. And so we need some major upgrades in our air handling facilities. As for our locker rooms, we've added some space with the growing programs, but the spaces are cramped, really don't provide adequate separation for the male and female athletes. Other changes you're going to hear about from Reed Hutton, and he'll have some more detail. But we're going to actually dedicate ourselves to expanding the use of our facilities to all four seasons. And we're also trying to expand our offering to people of all ages to utilize these programs and these venues. By adding indoor turf, we'll have practice facilities for a variety of sports outside of ice program seasons. And by adding artificial turf to the baseball field, we'll have a facility where nearby towns can hold practices and have games when their fields are unusable in the spring, fall, and after heavy rains. This has already happened at our high school soccer and football field, with much greater utilization of the field from other programs in the region. So small towns are coming in and practicing and having games when, again, heavy rains or outside of the peak season for grass. But with the improvements in the baseball complex right alongside the Civic Center, we can make the amenities of the Civic Center available to our baseball participants as well. We've taken the input from a committee of about a dozen citizens to formulate the proposed renovations. These will benefit our entire region for decades. We know that we need to do lots of fundraising and add city dollars to make all the changes, but we look forward to the opportunity to bring this to our voters this fall for them to decide. And now, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to have Reed Hutton and continue our presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Gander. Next up, we have the Parks and Rec Superintendent Reed Hutton. Mr. Hutton, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity. Reed Hutton, I'm the Parks and Recreation Superintendent with the City of East Grand Forks. And thank you, Mayor, for the introduction as well. Just to touch on it and maybe some detail to what Mayor Gander introduced and preluded is we've formed a building committee in East Grand Forks that has worked really hard over the last 2 years to hear our residents and get a really strong understanding of the impact that our recreation facilities currently make in our community and how we would like to see these recreation facilities better serve our community through the year-round basis. This community committee of 12 members is made up of many demographics and interested user groups that we see as having a fit in seeing and using expanded offerings within recreation facilities in our community. And they've put in a lot of work, both in-person community forums and online forums. Throughout the last year, we've had multiple online surveys out and sought feedback with the response of more than 1,000 residents in East Grand Forks telling us what's important to them in their recreation facilities. And those interests and offerings are reflected in the master plan that we've developed. The master plan, one portion of it, an important portion of the funding plan to be able to see these facility improvements through is the local sales tax. And as Mayor Gander touched on, we certainly expect to continue to work really hard as a community to be able to fundraise and make up the remaining funding gap above and beyond what local sales tax revenue could provide to the project. The number one goal for our facility improvements at the two sites that we have included in the plan is to, as some other communities have stated today as well, is to make sure that these existing recreation facilities can stand the test of time, to make sure we make the improvements to the refrigeration plants and the ice arenas, make ADA improvements, make improvements to the indoor air quality through the HVAC and mechanical systems, to really update some infrastructure that in a lot of cases has not been updated since the buildings were built in the 1970s. The second goal of these projects is to further expand the recreation offerings for our region and our community. Right now, largely these facilities serve a four or five month a year season as indoor ice facilities and basically remain shuttered the rest of the year. And that does not serve the purpose of our community today, the way that it did when they were built in the 1970s. And so really that's the master plan side of this project, is to be able to expand the amenities that these facilities have, make them more than just indoor ice arenas or baseball fields, but really make them multi-purpose facilities that can serve not only our residents, but our region as well. The two sites that we have are the Civic Center Sports Complex. That's the site of one existing ice arena. That's our primary ice arena in our community that hosts a lot of our large events and our high school activities. The main plan at that, as Mayor Gander alluded to, is to add an addition that builds new locker rooms and addresses a lot of the accessibility and HVAC, mechanical, indoor air quality type of concerns the existing facility has. And the second phase of that is to build a new outdoor baseball field that would be synthetic turf from fence to fence and would allow us the opportunity to host multiple events, multiple games earlier in the season than what our current grass facilities do. Secondly, we feel that by going with a synthetic turf surface, it would open up a new avenue of multiple sports beyond just baseball that would be able to make use of that facility. The second site that's included in our plan is the VFW Blue Line Arena site. That currently houses two ice arenas that are standalone buildings that are in large need of improvement to the current existing infrastructure. And the second phase of that plan is to build an addition that connects those two arenas together and really furthers the way that, that facility can serve our community, again, beyond the ice season, but also as a competitive spirit of being able to host youth tournaments and youth gatherings. In current day, youth parents that look to bring their teams and their children to sporting events oftentimes look for a place that they can have all of the games be under one roof, so to speak, and not have to bounce across town to multiple facilities. And we think that by connecting those two facilities together, it affords us a new competitive opportunity to be able to offer events for as many as 16 youth teams all under one roof, and really become a regional draw to bring that back to our community. Competitively, from a regional perspective, knowing that we do, as we talked about, border with Grand Forks, North Dakota, in recent years, with some facility improvements that have been made from the ice arena perspective in Grand Forks, East Grand Forks has fallen behind competitively in its ability to attract interest and host youth tournaments of that nature. And we feel that our community feels that that is one of the most important aspects of this project, is being able to improve our amenities that maybe put us back above Grand Forks as our neighbors, as a competitive spirit of hosting tournaments and gathering interest from other communities outside the region to visit and compete in our facilities. And finally, the last thing I would like to touch on in closing is in East Grand Forks, we do have a proven history of local success with the sales tax increase. In 2015, our voters approved by more than 70% margin a 1% sales tax increase to fund renovations to our outdoor swimming pool. We expected at the time that it would take 5 years for that pool project to be paid off in full with sales tax revenue, and it far exceeded that from a revenue expectation. The pool project was completed, and the project was paid for in full in less than 3 years, allowing that 1% sales tax to sunset at the end of September in 2020. So we have a proven record that it has worked. The swimming pool, I will add, regionally has been a great success. The last season prior to its closing for renovations, it had less than 8,000 daily visitors for a seasonal pool. in comparison, last summer, that swimming pool had 22,000 daily visitors, so a more than 250% increase. And we know we have regional users of the swimming pool, people holding season passes at that pool from as far away as Thief River Falls, which is a 50-mile drive from East Grand Forks. So we know it works. We know it's bringing people into our community from across the region. And we hope that you will hear our bill and give us an opportunity to let our voters vote for it in November.
Thank you, Mr. Huntman. Members, any questions for the testifiers or Representative Keel? Did I hear you right that you paid off the swimming pool in 3 years?
Yes, that's correct. It was a little less than 3 years. The pool project was fully funded and paid off.
Wow, that's great. Thank you for that information. Seeing no questions, Representative Keel, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. I really appreciate you hearing this bill and hope it is part of our final project. Just remember up north, we like to see you all come and play hockey and swim in pools. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Keel. With that, I lay over House File 3763 as amended for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Member.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mayor Gander. Sorry, I had flipped to another screen. Sorry about that. Members, we are coming around the corner to the end of a very long day. I want to thank you for all sticking with us. We have our final bill on the agenda. We have House File 3969 before us. Representative Hertaz, would you like to move House File 3069 before the division?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm proud to move the last file of the day, House File 3969. Representative Swininski for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Representative Hertaz. Representative Swininski, welcome to the committee. I understand that you have an amendment that you'd like to briefly speak to. Representative Hertaz, would you like to move the, I think it's the A1 amendment before the committee for, or A4 amendment before the committee for discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A4 amendment.
With that, Representative Swininski, welcome to the Property Tax Division. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The A4 amendment is kind of a new idea that we're pushing. It's been addressed in other communities where we essentially create a revenue sharing program with these local option sales taxes. And, you know, oftentimes we look at the regional significance of a project, but also the regional input. And, you know, what the amendment does is create an economic development zone essentially around some of the regions that are implementing local option sales taxes. And what the A4 amendment does is create a special account for economic development to fit within state guidelines, so the same types of projects for the cities that surround a regional center that enacts local option sales tax. The A4 amendment takes 10% of revenue that's generated through the local option sales tax, if approved by local voters within the city of Marshall, and distributes it to communities that reside within about a 35-mile radius. And that takes into account the uniqueness of dollars flowing into regional centers. On average, some local option sales taxes in regional centers bring in 60% of revenue from outside sources, some 25, some 35. But this is really about a conversation that I think we need to have, not only for the regional impact, but how do we keep dollars in the communities that provide them? And while people make a choice to come to our regional centers and spend money, the idea of creating an account like this is to make sure that, it's a shared cost, that there are shared costs and shared need, that, for communities that maybe don't have a large economic base, a community that maybe doesn't have a lot of retail, a lot of others, those dollars are still being generated and spent someplace else. And this would allow some of those dollars to come back to recognize that dollars spent in a community can potentially stay with the people rather than the community in which they're spent. I would like to answer any questions. I don't know if any members have looked at the amendment and thoughts. This is closely resembled to the account that's kind of created for the city of Rochester. They have a 4% revenue essentially, and this is 10%. Yeah, so I just wanted to open it up to members and to chat about it and to get some thoughts. So, can you hear me, Madam Chair?
Thank you so much. I was just looking down at the script here. Representative Hertaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is an interesting suggestion or idea. It plays a little bit on the conversation that we had a little bit earlier with one of the other bills. Jim Marquardt and myself talking about the regional draw and increasing the disparity between the cities that get the half tax and the effect on the surrounding communities. So it's an interesting idea, but I think it's not ready for prime time, but mm-hmm. I think it's something that should be discussed.
Thank you, Representative Hertaz. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swazinski, I like the idea. It's a novel idea. And a lot of us have said for a while that the local option sales taxes will create winners and losers. The smaller towns and cities don't have the retail base. So I like your idea. I like the concept. I would support it if you get the language worked up and whatever. Nice idea. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Any other questions or comments? Just a reminder for folks, this is somewhat similar to the DMC, but that bill went to multiple committees, and it is the hope of the chair that we wouldn't be dragging the property tax division bill into multiple committees before we get it to Chair Marquardt. But Representative Studinski would like to keep working on it, maybe as a standalone bill to go to local government, and a bunch of other folks would probably like to have some input on it as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think that the, you know, while we sometimes have a good idea, we do need to get more of a community input in this, but also I believe other legislators have some good ideas when it comes to this particular area. Not necessarily winners and losers, but, I think a lot of our voice needs to be thought of is when we're looking at constituents who has a voice in it. And if the vote is taken and a majority of folks that will pay, or even a minority of the folks that will pay, but have no potential real voice in the vote. So when we're looking at some of these regional sales taxes for regional projects, that maybe they should be approached in a regional basis so that a greater amount of people that actually pay can also vote. And so with that, Madam Chair, I will continue to work on this, work on the language so that we can have a broader conversation, not just for a certain region within Minnesota, but potentially as this moves forward, any one of these 14 or 15 bills, that this could be a possibility as those things move forward. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm looking forward to hearing from representatives from the City of Marshall, and would like to pull the amendment before your consideration so that we don't drag this down and put this into other committees that would potentially slow this vote down. So thank you, Madam Chair, for the time.
Thank you, Representative Sudinski. With that, I will move to the testifier. We have with us the Mayor of Marshall, Robert Burns. Bryans, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Burns. I'm the Mayor of the City of Marshall. Also with me, if there's questions that need to be answered, is City Administrator Sharon Hansen. Madam Chair, if it's okay, I will, and members, I'll proceed with the presentation.
Go ahead, proceed, Mayor.
So the request of this legislation is to the authorization to go to a vote of the public this November for a continuation of our current local option sales tax. Our current local option sales tax was approved by the voters in 2012, and first year of collection was 2013. The purpose of that was for a regional event and expo center, as well as the regional emergency response and industrial center. The request for the extension is for the construction of a regional aquatic center. the Regional Aquatic Center would replace a swimming pool slash aquatic center that was originally constructed in 1938. There's been a number of fixes in between the time, but it is in need of complete replacement. We, because of the age of the facility, the infrastructure of it is deteriorating. We lose 12 to 15,000 gallons of water a day during the summer. We does not meet ADA compliance. The swimming area or the bathhouse, and most importantly, it doesn't meet the regional needs. We are a regional center, but we're a small community of 14,000. Our daytime population roughly doubles that, and these are people for services, for retail. We have a numerous area that obviously do not have swimming centers, and those families are coming to the city of Marshall for recreation opportunities, for swimming, and for swimming lessons. Now, the we don't differentiate in cost, participation costs based on residence. If you're out of town, you pay the same as a resident of the city of Marshall. This is broadly supported in the community. Our Chamber of Commerce is supportive of this. It represents a continuation of a current tax, not an increase in tax. And we feel it's important for recruitment of families for a region of the state that does have decline in population. With that, Madam Chair, I will stand open for any questions, either directed at myself or City Administrator Sharon Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Burns, Mayor Burns. Did Ms. Hansen want to speak, or do you want to just go to member questions?
I can just stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Members have any questions about the project? Seeing none, Representative Stradinsky, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, City Administrator Hansen as well. You know, members, this is probably one of the oldest pools in the state. You know, it is in need of replacement. So with that, I would appreciate your support and inclusion in a potential bill that moves forward out of your committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stransky. With that, I lay over House File 3969 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to thank members for hanging with us today for the wild and wonderful world of local option sales tax. I think this was an easier approach than having it being three different hearings, but if you think differently, let me know so we don't repeat that again. But next week, we're also going to be having two hearings. One will be at our normal time on Wednesday, the 16th at 3 p.m. And that one, and then we will have one on Friday, the 18th, that will go from 8:30 to noon. We have a lot of bills around local government aid, property tax refunds, and the like. So look for those postings. And then after that, members, just so you can look forward, Wednesday the 23rd will be our final division day for hearing bills. So just three more committee times for bills, members. We see the deadlines looming around the corner. And I want to just check to see if anybody has any questions about the times next week. Seeing none, with that, members, we are adjourned.